the AHDB podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss future episodes.
Hi, my name's Samantha Charlton. I'm HDB Beef and Lamb Knowledge Exchange Manager for the North East. And today I'm joined by one of our challenge sheep farmers, James Drummond, who farms 1,500 ewes near Alnwick in Northumberland. Today we're going to have a chat about his outdoor lambing system and how he's coping in this very challenging weather conditions. So, hi James, and thank you for talking to us today. Could you just give me a brief overview of your farm and your lambing system?
Yes, certainly. So we're sheep and beef farmers, predominantly forage focused. We're looking basically to maximise what we can from the grass that we can grow on the farm. So we say we're in about 1,500 ewes. We used to be running just over 800, had quite a big change in the genetics we've used on farm. So we changed from a stratified system to trying to simplify it a bit. Started with one breed, but we've actually expanded to a few others. Basically through a breeding partnership that we're doing with Innovis, we've started up three breeds with them. The idea is we're going to produce rams for their sale structure, and that's very much geared up how we approach farming on farm, that very forage focused, trying to maximize what we can produce. We've nearly doubled the stock numbers in that time, in the last sort of 5 years, of both sheep and cattle.
Wow.
So we're very much trying to just eke as much as we can out of that grass. So we want it as easily managed as possible. All the cattle are outwintered, the spring and autumn herd. There's no feed goes in them at all. We try to do everything off pasture and forage. We grow brassicas and fodder beet for winter grazing.
Okay, excellent. And do you farm at home with your dad, is that right?
Yep, farm at home with dad.
Yeah, any other help or?
Get a bit of help in at lambing time. We used to get a bit of help back in the day when we had a lot less, but we're doing a lot of feeding then, and I don't know, you had to assist lambs and stuff back in the day, all the things you did with bad sheep. Now we just run around with little handheld computers recording everything instead.
Okay, all right. So as we mentioned at the beginning, obviously weather has been quite challenging this year. Just wondered how is that, or what impact has that had for your plans for the winter?
It's not impacted the plans too much. We've changed what we're doing quite a bit this winter based on the fact that we want to be feeding that much silage. We want to be more pasture or forage or brassica based, so we put in a lot of fodder beet this year to try. Obviously quite a wet year for trying that for the first time, and
well done for trying then.
Yeah, it's gone quite well. I say we wanted to reduce the reliance on silage. We wanted to up our stock as well, so the main pinch point we had, we can rotationally graze, we can get better at utilising grass throughout the spring and summer, but the main pinch point was the winter. Like, how do you keep the extra stock when you're not really growing any forage on farm?
Yeah.
So the fodder beet played a big role in that, a very high yield, and we can use a small area of the farm to get a lot of feed and keep a lot of animals in a small area and rest more of the farm to ensure we've got a good pasture cover going into lambing time in the spring. Obviously in a wet year like this, when you've got more animals on a smaller area, it's the issues you get with wet weather. So it's been a learning curve for the first year, but very pleased with how it's gone. And another reason we did this was based on what we've done with challenge sheep over the years, looking at the data we've collected both with Innovis and HDB, and what that change in body condition and weight in the ewe between mating and scanning does on your scanning percentage, but also your rearing percentage and how that data is followed through the system.
Okay, brilliant. So what's been particularly different about this year then, or what have you been forced to change on the farm?
Forced to change too much. We thought we'd be grazing beet a little bit longer. When we put it in, looked at the budget, I thought we'd probably get 25 to 30% of intake coming from silage.
Okay.
We're on 3 day shifts and they're not going to eat silage when they've got lovely fresh feed in front of them in the form of the fodder beet. So we ran out of beet probably three and a half weeks earlier than we thought. But we were on 3-day shifts. We wanted to actually see what benefit the fodder beetle in the system was going to have. So we thought we'd just let them go at it and see how it went that first year. It worked very well for the A flock, that whole mating on grass. They were just short of 2 cycles, went onto the beet, gained a third of condition in that time, scanned very well. We had 250 of the poorest performing ewes on farm. We tried to mate on the beet. That didn't go well. The beat is good.
Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing.
Yeah, oh, no, I'm happy to try these things.
You did share it on Twitter.
Oh,
though.
Yeah, I shared it, though. If we cock it up, I'll let people know. Whether that was the beat, whether it was the conditions, then you got 17 days. They were synchronised with teasers. That first week when we'd expect 60% of them to take to the top, they were standing in mud with the backs of the rain looking very miserable.
Yeah.
Knew that at the time, could have run the rams a bit longer, didn't want to be lambing much longer than our lamb already, so we just left them at 17 days and got a good cull price for the geld ewe, so
yeah,
silver linings and all that.
So tell me about your scanning results then. How did you perform?
Did very well. So the system, how we're going to run it, that mate on grass onto the beet for your wintering system, worked very well. I'd say that was based on the challenge sheet data. Very sort of crude findings from the first couple of years were that the ewes that lost body condition between mating and scanning compared to those that kept or gained body condition resulted in a 30% difference in scan.
Right.
So just keeping the condition of them ewes. So whether that's embryo implantation or looking at survival quite early on, the nutrition's obviously having a bit of effect on what embryos are kept in the ewe, what your scanning percentage is. So we very much wanted to look at keep the condition on them, and as I say, we gained a third of a condition score in that period. That was, I think, 3.5 kilos for the shearlings they put on. The ewes were 5 and a bit kilos, so by the time we took that data, they'd have 1 or 2 kilos in lamb inside them as well. So they've done a lot better than our usual wintering system. Normally we'd actually lose about a third of a condition score in that period, and the scan was very good. I was happy with that. The ewes were about 195%. The shearlings were 175%. That's after scanning at about 120 last year's a ewe lamb.
Okay.
The ewe lambs were back a bit. They were just over 100%. Again, like the beef flock, they were mated at the same time. They get 17 days on grass because they get mated on a kale swede mix, and it was very wet and miserable during that period. But just 17 days, we'll see what it takes. We got just over 100% on 400 ewe lambs, so quite happy with that.
Good.
And as I say, it was just that beef flock was where we saw the poor performance really in our scan. We were probably running too many sheep anyways. Doubled the cattle numbers, taking everything through to finishing as opposed to store, and lost about 10% of our land. So it might work out all right in the year. We'll see what the spring brings.
Okay. So you mentioned there that you manage the whole flock with an A flock and a B flock. How long have you been doing that, and what made you decide to do it that way?
It's basically just make sure you're breeding up from your best ewes. When we started, the route went down with embryos breeding up for the breeds we're going to do with Innovus. We're using our commercial ewes as recipients. Then going forward, we're using that sort of BC flock, the poor performing ewes, as recipients in future embryo programs. Now that we're up and running in natural, we only want to be breeding replacements and rams from our top performing ewes that have got in lamb in the first cycle. So we had just over 900 A flock ewes. They get 17 days single sire mated, and then they're mobbed up. Anything that doesn't hold, I think we had 94% held to that first cycle in the A flock. Anything that doesn't hold joins the B flock, and they're going to a terminal sire, so they're just commercial fat lamb producing, just to make sure them poor performing ewes, if there's any traits that we don't want, any problems we had, or just poor performance, or ewes that aren't keeping their condition well enough on a forage-based system. Anything we don't like, we don't want to breed up from, we'll just put in that beef flock.
Okay. So sometimes it's hard to think, but we have got lambing coming round the corner. So what are your plans for lambing in terms of lambing outdoors? how do you collect that data? Because I can tell that you like data. So tell me what you do during Lamin and how you manage that system.
Yeah, so we do quite a lot of data collection. I think we're getting a bit better at it as time goes on. Some of it's for yourselves with the Challenge Sheep project, some of it's for our own breeding and what we do for the ram production. And I suppose our system's sort of geared around being able to take that data. So we're outdoor in the day. One thing that is a bit of a pain with our system is the fact we've got a guaranteed parentage. Every animal on farm's got an EBV for it. As soon as we lose the ability to link that lamb to its mother, we lose the parentage, lose the EBV, it's just a commercial lamb then. So we do bring them in at night. We've not got much space, and it's basically so we can have someone in the shed at night collecting that sort of laminese, the vigour, the maternal behaviour score, and then penning up so that we know when we go in the morning, when we're tagging and recording, we've got the right parentage there. If we're going around the farm and we can have 50 ewes lambing a night, if you've got 90 lambs to catch and record and 20 of them in a corner all huddled up, they'd be useless for our EBVs.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a pain for the system. We don't have to do that on the B flock. For the A flock, we do. But it's just to enable that accuracy in the data recording. We'd like to go down the DNA route, but it's just too expensive to justify, to be honest. Yeah. You're on about 35 grand plus a year, and it'd be 20 grand more that first year. So actually, we've just got to do it through our system to guarantee that data. So yeah, we're collecting quite a bit at point of lambing. That's both data for the lamb and data for the ewe, and that's data that would feed into various projects or EBVs, but hopefully just help make the system better as well. So the lambs are getting the sex, the laminese, the vigour, the weight. We're also recording any entropium or any that haven't got a good cover score, so we're taking them out of the system. The link to the ewes, they're getting maternal behaviour score, colostrum score and body condition scored. And so the whole idea of the records is we want a sheep that's going to keep its condition well on a forage-based system, going to spit out the lambs, they're going to get up, suckle, there's no intervention, and just to know that you've got an easy managed system. Say back in the day we were running around catching things to give birth to, and there's all the hassle of that. We've kind of got rid of them issues. We just run around tagging and recording now instead.
Yeah. So how does that data collection help with your outdoor lambing system then?
Help the system? Well, because we've got quite a maternal breed, there's not too many problems there. Because we're recording the laminese and the vigour, we can soon take any poor performing ewes out of the system. Generally, not so much for the B flock. I just want them off the farm altogether because they're still going to be a pain wherever they are on the farm. So we want to make sure we've got something that can just get on and do the job and actually take them records at point of lambing. And it doesn't have to be the full tag at birth EID recording. You can quite simply do it with ear notches and a bit of spray.
Yeah.
It's just identifying them problem ewes and getting them out of the system.
Absolutely. And in terms of lambing losses then, obviously I'm not trying to tempt fate in any way here, but how do you record your lambing losses and what have you done with that data in the past?
So all lambs are recorded at point of birth. So whether they're live or dead, they get recorded. Your live lambs obviously got a tag in, our dead lambs get a death code. So it's still an individual code to that animal. It still gets all the records taken on it. So whether that was poor vigour resulting in death, whether there's a lambing assistance or just a dystocial problem, any sort of problem, that is then linked to the mother and it's in all the records then. So we've still got the evaluation for the sires, for the ewes performance. One thing we have sort of seen coming out of the data of the dead lamb, especially at sort of point of lambing or quite close after it, is that birth weight. So a lot of that has to do with the nutrition in the ewe, the body condition score, trying getting good nutrition, so that'll be good grass or however you're going to feed your animals leading up to point of lambing on a ewe with good condition, and a good birth weight in the lambs. So we see that it was over 80% of our lambs lie within that 3.75 and 5.75 birth weight, but we're only getting 20% of the losses in that range. So 80% of our losses are happening on the under 20% of lambs outside of that range. So it's the ones that are too light, that are too big, that are giving you the problems.
Wow.
So that's not necessarily the nutrition going in light lambs. We don't get as many light lambs. It's if you're feeding singles, that's why giving them too much pasture, giving them concentrate feed, something that's going to give you a big lamb,
yeah.
And you're going to have losses at point of lambing. And not only at point of lambing, if you look at post-mortem results later down the line, there's a lot of deaths from dystochia, things that have happened at lambing time, and it's maybe taken a week or so to actually kill that lamb that's had squashed or damaged organs, and just getting that birth weight right, trying to get a nice sort of medium-sized, easy lamb
absolutely.
Is really going to help your losses.
Yeah. So you mentioned that nutrition starts with you, and obviously this year we've been tested to the limit a little bit in terms of what the ewes have got in front of them. So what have you done this year? What's going on at home at the moment?
What's going on at the moment? So we're not on the grass rotation yet. We're getting quite close to lambing. We'll start sort of beginning of April, or the last weekend of March. We had to move forward a couple of days this year. So we body condition scored everything when we started taking the individual data at scanning time. So after the scan, they come back through, get weighed, body condition scored. We're giving them a fluke and collecting the data from them. So we've got the ewes, the twin ewes, sitting on a sacrifice field at the minute. They were supposed to be getting on the grass rotation. I say we're probably getting them close to about 3.5 weeks out. But because of the wet weather, we didn't want to go and start making a right mess in them fields. Got a lot of fields up the top of the farm. We sort of farm on a ridge, so we're very exposed on the top, which is good for putting our fodder beet and our brassicas in for winter grazing. It's not very good at lambing time because it's very exposed. We put a lot of herb legume lays in there, so we want to be grazing them lays leading up to lambing time, get that winter growth off them to really help the spring growth once the lambs are a bit older, then get up on the top. But they're all quite high cost lays, are quite new lays, so we didn't really want to be cell grazing them in the weather we've had this past week or so. So because we body condition scored the ewes, any fit twins just stayed on a sacrifice field. They came off the beat at scanning time when they finished it, and they've just been on a sacrifice field getting silage. So we'll just trash that one field to try and rest as much of the farm as we can. That goes into a brassica next year. We're going to put a kale swede mix in there for the ewe lambs to be wintered on, so we don't mind making a right mess. It actually breaks up the turf quite a bit, gets a bit of fertility in the ground.
So how many ewes have you got on that?
We had all of them on there. Since scanning, the singles went back onto where the fodder beet was, so the fodder beet field is a sacrifice field, which plunged up a bit, but see, we're quite windy, so it dries up when it's not raining. And then we've put about 500 fit twins onto that field. When we body condition scored any lean, so we looked at about 10% of the ewes, I think just a bit under 10% of the ewes that were body condition score 3.5 and under, we pulled out and put on a patch of sort of deferred grazing with some silage. And 3.5 seems quite extreme. We pull them out as leans. They just are very fit this year. So it was just the leaner sort of 10%. That came out, and we've actually just started them on a bit of concentrate feed, and we've also just started the triplets on a little bit of concentrate feed as well. So them ones in good condition, we don't mind keeping them a bit closer to the lambing on the silage, and if they lose a little bit of condition, it'll be all right before they get on this grass rotation, which hopefully with the weather now we'll get on in the next couple of days. And them ones that take those a bit more of a hit, that are a bit lower condition, we're just a bit of preference going into them, just to hopefully not hinder performance at all.
So James, you've talked or had some examples there of how you use body condition score to manage the flock. When exactly do your body condition score, and what have you learned from Challenge Sheep Project with that?
So we body condition score and individually record at 5 key points of the year. So we mentioned we do scanning, we'll do it at point of lambing, we also do it at 8 weeks. We'll condition score and weigh the ewe when we do weights on the lambs. We also do the same at weaning, and then we'll do the same at mating as well. We also use body condition score on the ewes as a management tool between weaning and mating as well, to make sure we've got them in target condition at point of mating. So that's both giving preference to the grazing in any leaner ewes, and again making sure the fatties aren't too fat, because some of the data we've seen is when you start getting up to condition score 4.5, 4.75, and 5, like that can actually have a bit of a dip in your scan percentage, and you can actually save a bit of grass by not feeding them and getting that condition pulled back down before mating, and give the preference to those that actually need it.
Brilliant, excellent. And you mentioned that you're not on your rotational system quite yet. When will you go on to that, and how do you manage that?
Hopefully in the next couple of days. So I'm bringing the twins in tomorrow. They need their Bovoxin and OviPass boosters. So the plan is we'll put them onto the grass rotation tomorrow, and that will be the start of cell grazing. So
excellent.
I'll hopefully get the fences up. Probably not tonight now. I think it'll be 500 ewes to do in the morning and a quick fencing session before they get turned out. But that will hopefully be them through to Point of Lambing. Singles, we're keeping on the sacrifice field. At the minute, they're on the beat, X-beat sacrifice field. We'll probably put them on the grass because it's a little bit nicer for them, and keep them on silage. And the triplets, as I say, they're getting a little bit of feed into them at the minute. We might get them onto a rotation as well and possibly keep a bit of feed going into them. I'll go re-measure the grass, because I know when I looked at it a week or two ago, we were a little bit short on what we wanted, and there wouldn't have been much growth this last week or so.
No.
And I don't really want to be going and eating into too many lambing fields. I'd rather have that cover there. One of the most important things in our system is having the cover at Point of Lambing. Anything you have to do before lambing is a lot easier if you needed to feed a ewe now. So once the lambs are out of grass, you're not going in and disturbing them with feed. They're not leaving the lambs. They come and scoff the faces in the corner of a field with you. So it's depending on your system and what you can do. Actually, if people are having to go, a lot of people do feed if they are at this time of year, it's a good way to make sure you've got good covers for Point of Lambing. And as far as I'm concerned, once they're lambed, you don't really want to be doing anything to them.
And what are you aiming for in terms of covers?
Set of stock on this time of year? Yeah, you can get over 2,000. It's quite nice. Some fields we're close to that at the minute. Some are probably back at sort of 1750. Some of them, actually, we've got some that we didn't get grazed in the winter there, but I'm going to put some ram lambs under them. They'll be sitting at sort of 2,600 at the minute, but a lot of that's some growth carried through the winter, and say it's just been too wet to get on any earlier.
Yeah.
Again, then ram lambs have been on a sacrifice field just with a bit of deferred grazing and silage until we can get on the better lays once they've dried up a bit. But they're down on the heavier part of the farm down the bottom, but we should hopefully be able to get on pretty soon with them.
Okay. And in terms of grass measurement, are you old school? Do you like the sword stick?
Or? Pretty old school, yeah. And by eye as well.
Yeah.
Not got a plate meter or anything, using an app for recording. But sword stick, old school all the way.
Okay. And your fencing system, how does that work?
Fencing system, use a lot of electric. Obviously, through the winter, they've been on the fodder beat, so that was 3-day shifts behind electric. The cattle are all behind electric on fodder beat as well. And we use quite a lot of electric on the herb legume lays and on the permanent pasture as well. Now that I've stopped spending quite so much money on embryos and say things like that, I've been able to put a bit more into permanent infrastructure the last couple of years. So we did just over 10k of fencing last year, not quite as much, but nearly the year before. Some we put in with hedging grants as well, so we did about 3.5k of hedging, so that was a good way to get a load of new fencing in as well, a lot of new gateways. So actually trying to build the permanent infrastructure on farm. It's quite handy having them small paddocks, trying to split as much as we can down to 2 hectare paddocks, whether that's with electric or with permanent. The more that we can do with permanent means the less electric I need to keep buying. Also, what we do with single side mating groups, I end up with 25 Tupman groups, so you can't really get much of a rotation going when you've got 25 groups. Yeah, the smaller we can get their paddocks down, it means we can have some sort of grazing management going, and just for ease, trying to get investment into permanent infrastructure. And on a tenant farm, I might be a bit mad, but hopefully I see it's quite a long thing.
You are a little
thing.
Bit mad.
Yeah, I'm not going to deny that.
So what would you say are your top 3 tips for outdoor lambing?
Top 3 tips for outdoor lambing. I think we all said sheep production is down to genetics, nutrition and management. So I suppose for your genetics, you've got to get the right breeds. So make sure you've got the right breed for your system. Everyone's system is going to be different in their goals and aspirations and what they want out of life. But I suppose if you want a forage-based system, get genetics that are going to be suited to forage. So yeah, genetics, get them right. Make sure you're evaluating them for the right traits, especially for lamb and thyme, looking at laminase, vigour, maternal behaviour score. Make sure you've got something that's going to make your life a bit easier. Pasture cover, I say, is very important as well. So look for a long rest period. We've changed quite a bit what we did on farm. As I said, we've got the fodder beat in, so that was very much based on the challenge sheep data. It was based on the fact that I want to be feeding as much silage, I want an easier wintering system, but it's also looking at my spring covers as well. So I wanted to be able to leave a higher residual in the back end, so I was getting off the grass early, I wasn't trying to eke out everything I had on farm, and give a longer rest period to make sure I've got as much pasture as I can going into lambing. And thirdly, I suppose as management, it's making sure you've got what ewes you've got on your farm working right for you. So that's really identifying problem ewes in your system. So if you have been assisting in anything, if you have had poor vigour, you've anything that's caused you a bit of hassle at lambing time or throughout the year. I'm quite harsh on culling things that push through fences, because once they're gone, they don't push through fences anymore. So just, yeah, mark, even if you're not doing EID like we are, just ear notch or mark on the back of the head with a big red dot, something like that. Just get them poor form and use out the system.
Okay. Well, thank you, James. Thank you for talking to us and being so honest as always. And thanks for giving us your time today. And thank you for listening to Beef and Lamb podcast.
You're listening to the AHDB podcast. Farming news and stories from across the UK.